Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What happened in the White House yesterday. I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown, in this case a $20 billion shakedown, with the Attorney General of the United States, who is legitimately conducting a criminal investigation and has every right to do so to protect the interests of the American people, participating in what amounts to a $20 billion slush fund that's unprecedented in our nation's history, that's got no legal standing, and which sets, I think, a terrible precedent for the future.
Now, I happen to agree with Congressman Joe Barton, who has been attacked. I don't know what you feel about that. You're listening to The Savage Nation. Do you believe that Obama's shaking down BP, yes or no? Number two, I have a few comments to make about the BP oil hearings. I watched a few of them today. And what struck me about the hearings is that the chairman of BP seemed extremely rational and responsible, and I'd rather see him as president of the United States than Barack Hussein Obama. That's number one. Number two, let's not forget that this is an accident. Accident. Things happen. What these verminous Congress people are doing are acting like most of the class action lawyers that most of them were before they became Congress thieves. They're trying to prove liability where there may not be any liability. They don't know the first thing about running a business and what inherent risk there is in any business venture and in any venture whatsoever, especially the risky proposition of drilling oil 5,000 feet below the surface of the ocean. Do you actually think that Congressman Nostrelman could work on a rig? Do you actually think that any of these grandstanders in Congress know the first thing about drilling? These people have never provided a service, nor have they built a product that anybody needs. All these Congress vermin do is threaten people and sue people. Secondly, while these hearings have been very informative, I would now like to see an equal set of hearings with the government put on the stand. I'd like to see Obama put on the stand. I'd like to see the head of the Minerals Management Department put on the stand. I'd like to see Janet Napolitano put on the stand. I'd like to see all of the individuals who dragged their heels put on the stand. I'd like to see all of them put on the stand from the government and see why the government did nothing for 40 days. What they've done here is very clever indeed. The Democrats have held a Stalinist show trial against BP. Perhaps rightly so in part. But what they've really done here is pass the buck. They're very, very clever devils indeed. What they've done is put the entire blame, that is 100% of the blame, on BP rather than on the Obama administration. The government's response, however, is an equally important issue to be discussed and investigated. I would like to see hearings with the government put on the stand. Now, why are we not seeing any hearings on the failure of the Obama administration and their obvious negligence and their foot dragging and their schemes and their emails? Their emails. We heard a lot about emails today at the hearings, the email chains. They're showing the BP chairman and his email chains. How about the emails going back and forth between Feinberg or Feinstein, the czar now who is going to dispense the $20 billion slush fund? Are there any emails that show Feinberg's emails that show that he was in collusion to gain control of BP's $20 billion to begin with? Are there any emails that might show that the government purposely did not respond to the requests of Louisiana. Are there any emails that might purposely show that the government blocked Louisiana in order to make the spill worse for their own devious purposes? These are the hearings I, Michael Savage, would like to see. Now, let me put this in context for most of you. Let's look at some other accidents or disasters and see if hearings were held. And I'm going to mention a few. You can name others. I now mention the Fort Hood massacre, where almost as many people were killed by the Muslim gunman Major Hassan at an army base in Fort Hood. Was the government negligent in the Fort Hood massacre? Of course they were negligent. Major Hassan, the Muslim, practically signaled he was going to kill. But the Department of the Army did nothing. Napolitano of Homeland Security did nothing. Were they negligent? Should they be called before a congressional hearing? Did Eric Holder, our Attorney General, do his job? He certainly was privy to some of those goings-on of Major Hassan before he pulled the trigger. No, but none of these people would touch Major Hassan because they're afraid of the Muslim pressure groups. And so I believe there's a tremendous amount of negligence on the part of the government with regard to the Fort Hood massacre. And yet the government has so far refused to hold hearings on their behavior prior to the Fort Hood massacre. I would say there's a great deal of negligence in that case. This is something out of the ex-Soviet Union that we are witnessing, something known as Soviet show trials. It's a further example of the Soviet regime that's running the United States of America. I'm Michael Savage. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We're looking at the hearings today. You've heard my opinions. I'd like to know what your opinions are. Today we're going to look at the sharks with law degrees who were put in place to dispense the $20 billion and to run the Minerals Management Service. They're everything and more that you've ever feared about the Obama administration and what they're actually doing. One's name, Kenneth Feinberg. Does he know anything about oil? No. But you see, Feinberg is no stranger to money. Feinberg is a lawyer. Feinberg is a very, very fine class action type of lawyer. And Feinberg is going to actually be in charge of the $20 billion slush fund that was blackmailed out of BP to pay damages from the spills. What has Feinberg done before? Well, let's take a look at it. He's done a lot before. Feinberg has served in the past as a settlement master in cases including Agent Orange product liability litigation, asbestos personal injury litigation, DES cases, not to be confused with the DEA. And most interestingly enough, old Feinberg was one of the two arbitrators who determined the allocation of legal fees in the Holocaust slave labor litigation. So old Feinberg has been involved with asbestos litigation, Holocaust litigation, Agent Orange litigation. We have to ask Mr. Feinberg how much of the money that he oversaw went to the victims and how much went to the lawyers. And you'll soon find out that the $20 billion is only a down payment on the Al Capone regime that we have running the United States of America. So there's my position. This is Michael Savage. I'm back on the air. I'm at around 75% of operational capacity. I have six of my eight engines running perfectly. Two of my engines are faltering. I'm in an eight-engine, high-flying, supersonic aircraft, as you well know, flying on about 24,000 BTUs of power coming out of the hot tub. 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin in New York. Bobby, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, first of all, feel better. And I'm very worried. I mean, what's next? Now you have oil. Now you have the car companies. And it's just, it's a racket. And
what's
and
next is the media. Once this regime gets control of the newspaper industry, they already own it 90% in terms of philosophy. Most of the people in the newspaper business think like that actor Larry David. You understand who I'm talking about?
Sure.
You know who Larry David is? Do you ever hear of him?
Yeah, sure.
Think of Woody Allen with a little older Woody Allen. Okay, most of the people in the newspaper business are a combination of Woody Allen and Larry David. There is nothing that Obama could do that is wrong. There is nothing that an American, a God-fearing American can do that is right, that isn't mocked by the Larry David type. You understand that?
Yeah, so what happened?
And so what I'm saying to you is once the Obama regime gets control of the newspaper business by bailing them out, we will have a Venezuela-style dictatorship in the United States of America because there will be no criticism of this thin-skinned incompetent running the country. That's what's next. And I was going to lead to the next question on the Savage Nation. I've had a lot of time to think in my recovery. And one of the things I thought about was, this guy has been in power a year and a half. That's 18 months. And look what he's done to this country in a year and a half. He's taken a $1 trillion deficit and run it up to $4 trillion. He's taking control of one private industry after another. He has appointed one communist after another. He has appointed one communist after another, one criminal lawyer after another to run things they have no competence in, simply to shake down companies and to get control of the country. So, what damage do you think Obama is likely to do to the United States of America within the next 6 months, within the next 12 months, within the next 18 months, within the next 24 months? I'll be right back.
I'm ashamed of what happened in the White House. I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown.
You think this is a shakedown? I do. It doesn't mean that this accident was not an accident. It doesn't mean that there shouldn't be some liability on the part of the company. As you well know, the laws in this country are set up so that even an accident requires payments by a corporation. That's the way the scum in the legal profession have set it up. Because you see, the scum in the legal profession never create products. The vermin in the legal profession, particularly class action thieves, all of whom should be arrested, all of whom should have their assets seized onto the third generation. The vermin in the class action business do not create any products or services that anyone needs. What they do is they go after companies that create products and they steal from them. I know a few of them personally. They're the lowest of the low. They're the worst vermin I've ever met on the planet. And the shocking part is that these class action lawyers hold themselves up as doing good. They are criminals. They are gangsters. If I were president, I would arrest them. I'd seize their assets. I would seize their granddaughter's assets. And so I'm very, very angry about what I'm seeing. When I see that Obama puts Feinberg and Bromwich in to administer this disaster, I smell a rat. When I see a guy named Feinberg, who dispensed hundreds of millions of dollars in the 9/11 tragedy, when I see that Feinberg was one of the settlement geniuses in Agent Orange lawsuits and asbestos lawsuits, and of all things Holocaust litigation, which I know a lot about, because I know most of the Holocaust litigation money has gone to lawyers. I happen to know a lawyer who sues these lawyers because they're criminals who've been living off the proceeds of dead Jews. While screaming about the Holocaust, they held up Germany, and most of the money went to the lawyers. And when my friend the lawyer tried to stop them, he was thrown out of the courtroom. My friend the lawyer said, "What a shame on all of you that you would do this in the name of the Holocaust." The other lawyers laughed at him and threw him out of the courtroom. That's who Feinberg is. The other one that Obama appointed is named Bromwich. No experience with oil and gas. Harvard-educated lawyer who prosecuted Oliver North in the Iran-Contra case. This is a criminal shakedown of the highest order. It would make Al Capone look like a gang criminal from the streets. Alabama, Kevin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Hopefully you feel better, but thank you so much for doing what you do for us down here. First of all, it's a tragedy down here. A lot of people are feeling a lot of pain, but the main thing that I see is that Obama has decided that he wants to make it as bad as possible so that he can do his agenda as quick as possible and as easily as possible, so that all he has to do is show a dirty bird.
Yes, sir. Obama is an imposter. Obama is make no mistake about it, Obama is a front man for a variety of nefarious groups, one of which is the American Trial Lawyers Association. They vehemently blocked any Republican because they could not keep their criminal racket going. If there was tort reform, these vermin would have their assets seized. They'd have to go to some other country and practice it where it's not legal. So they put a stooge in. Don't make any mistake about it. Obama's not that smart. They're much more clever than he is. He's their front man. But I want to talk about something else. This was an accident. They're acting as though BP purposely blew a hole in the earth and purposely flooded the Gulf. Let's put this thing in context. It's an accident. Now let's go to the next sensitive issue, the fishermen, the tourist industry in the Gulf. I know what I'm going to say is controversial, but I'll say it anyway. Where is it written that your livelihood is guaranteed for the rest of eternity? Where is that written? Is that somewhere in the Bible or the U.S. Constitution that I missed? And the reason I raise this question is things happen. Yes, accidents, acts of nature, government interference. For example, this talk show host was a poor boy who wanted to be a college professor. He worked for 15 years to get his PhD, which was called a union card, to teach in a university. When his turn came to get that job, he was told white men need not apply by the ACLU, who said some people will have to have their careers put on hold while others are advanced. Now, that was a social engineering job of the lowest order by the ACLU. I got so damn mad, but I didn't sue anybody. Who could I sue? They stole my livelihood. They stole my birthright. A lesser man would have cracked from the stress. I had two young children. I'd worked for so many years, got a first-rate union card, so to speak. And they said, you're a white man. You can't teach in the universities anymore. It's only open to people of color and women, especially people of color and women who are less qualified than you, so that we can turn the universities into what they become. Well, I didn't get mad forever. I decided I had to make a living another way. I struggled for 10 years. Finally, I found other ways to make a living. But I didn't sue anybody. I figured that's what happens. There are social upheavals in a country. There are times in the past that there have been natural disasters. Remember the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma and Texas? Did they sue God because the tornadoes came through and blew off the topsoil? They went west, many of them, and they became grape pickers. You think that the Oklahomans wanted to become grape pickers? I don't go for this nanny state business.
Savage.
Have an unprecedented disaster in America, but there have been others. The Fort Hood massacre was a disaster that was government-induced because of the negligence of the Department of the Army, the Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice. During the hearings on the Fort Hood massacre, was Obama forced to testify about his sympathy for radical Muslims or his inability to go after them prior to an act of violence? No. During the hearings on the Fort Hood massacre, were the American people outraged by the number of people killed by Major Hassan? No. And the answer is because it was not as visibly disturbing as a dead bird. You didn't see the brains of the soldiers splattered on the ground because the folks in the media hid that from you. Did you see the brains and the faces blown off by Major Hassan's handguns? He killed over 9 or 11 people, I forget which number, almost the same number, within a certain range of those killed in this offshore disaster here in the Gulf. He wounded 32 people, Major Hassan. Why was there no outrage in the United States of America? I have to go to a film for the answer, The Godfather, where there's a telling scene, where there's an incident where they talk about the newspapers. Do you have that ready, guys?
You're taking this very personal. Tom, this is business, and this man is taking it very, very personal.
Where does it say that you can't kill a cop?
Come on, Mikey.
Tom, wait a minute. I'm talking about a cop that's mixed up in drugs. I'm talking about a dishonest cop, a crooked cop who got mixed up in the rackets and got what was coming. That's a terrific story. And we have newspaper people on the payroll, don't we, Tom? They might like a story like that.
They might. They just might.
We have newspaper people on the payroll, don't we, Tom? And they might just like a story like that. Right, Tom? Has anything really changed since the 1950s or the 40s or the 30s? Has anything really changed? I mean, although they call themselves the Society of Professional Journalists, there are many who doubt that. Now, we also have a Congress that we know is corrupt. It's the most corrupt Congress in the history of this republic. We don't know if we can survive this gang. Case in point, you ready for this one? Because you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. It came out minutes ago. You believe the Obama Congress really cares about the fishermen in the Gulf? Mohegan Sun casino owners received $54 million in stimulus cash. The feds awarded a staggering $54 million to Connecticut's politically connected Mohegan Indian tribe, which runs one of the highest grossing casinos in the nation. The tribe, which operates the popular Mohegan Sun casino, earned more than $1.3 billion in gross revenues in 2009. But that didn't stop Democrat Senator Chris Dodd of getting the funds for the tribe. The stimulus money, a loan from a Department of Agriculture Rural Development Program, was meant to help communities of less than 20,000 people. And Todd went and stole from that fund and gave the Indian gambling casino $54 million. You tell me that this government is not corrupt? Even in high school, the little we knew about politics, we learned about pork barrel spending. It was called pork barrel spending. It had gotten so bad at a certain point in American history that a new administration came in and got rid of most of the pork barrel spending because the American people were outraged by it. But Obama and his lawyer bums from Harvard are so smart that they don't call it pork barrel spending anymore. They steal it from us, and they call it stimulus funds. Or they steal it from us, and they call it TARP funds. But make no mistake about it, they're stealing it from us. Can you justify giving that amount of money to an Indian gambling casino? $54 million? That's more than one-third of the $168 million allocated by the USDA in the latest wave of stimulus funding. How could this be possible? How could the Mohegan Tribal Gaming Authority receive money like that from Christopher Dodd? Stimulus dollars given to an Indian gambling casino in an area that hasn't been hurt by a hurricane or some other natural disaster, and Chris Dodd is not in handcuffs? Many people think Chris Dodd should have been in prison a long time ago. He's stealing money from hardworking Americans. That's why people are sick of our government. This government no longer protects the citizens from tyranny. This government is the tyranny that needs protecting from. That's what most people think, and that's why the Tea Parties are growing. That's why the tips up. If the Tea Parties are continuously pushed to the side, continuously disrespected by the vermin in the media, careful, listen to what I'm saying to you. That is what they want. Just as Obama let this disaster metastasize so he could gain control of an oil drilling company and steal money from the company and disperse it to his cronies through Kenneth Feinberg in this case, he would win a Jean Provocateur. I doubt very much that anyone in a Tea Party would permit this to happen. But I don't doubt at all that the government's not plotting as I speak to put someone inside of a Tea Party who's going to go haywire within the next 6 months prior to the elections in order to discredit them and to sweep the criminals back into power so they can hold on to the crimes that they're used to committing. Don't be provoked. Be very careful. Read up on what an agent provocateur is, because the government's planning to plant one in a Tea Party near you. That's my opinion. But let's focus instead on the oil spill. I believe this is one of the greatest scandals I've ever seen in my life playing out in front of our eyes. And while this is an accident, there may be some great liability on the part of BP and on Halliburton, who was actually doing the drilling, by the way. It's funny you don't hear the word Halliburton, isn't it? Why is it that we keep hearing the words BP, 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 but we don't hear the name of the company that's actually doing the drilling under license, as I understand it from BP, which is Halliburton? Why is Halliburton not even discussed? Why is BP so easily vilified, is the question. Now, I want to remind many of you left-wing stupid people who never worked a day in your life and actually earned a living that while you're salivating over the money that's going to be taken from BP, it's actually coming from pensioners in Britain. Those are old people who receive, I think, one out of three of their pension dollars from earnings of BP. Their pensions are actually being cut or withheld in the next quarter. So you're taking it from old people. That's number one. Secondly, BP is owned, 40% owned by American investors. That's number two. And number three, the very company that Obama says he wants to pay a fund, a victim's fund, he's trying to bankrupt. So with one hand, he tries to bankrupt and vilify the firm. With the other hand, he wants it to remain a viable commercial firm so that he can continue to milk it until it's like the proverbial sporting goods store in The Sopranos, where there's nothing left on the shelves and it's busted out and they go on to their next scam. That's my opinion. That's my worldview. I'm Michael Savage. This ain't entertainment. This ain't entertainment. Carlos in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Mike. First off, I want to thank you for inviting me to your show. And I'm extremely upset about a few issues, and I want to touch on a couple of them.
Well, touch already. You already took a preamble like you're in a court of law. Come on, it's radio. It's not a court. Let's go.
Okay. I'm extremely upset about the fact that people, not the general public, but I believe that some of the talking heads are blaming Obama for the oil spill. Now, and this is what I want to talk about. During the Bush administration...
Hold on, please. Don't talk about Bush. Leave me alone. I don't want to hear it anymore. You may be the only educated person in America who doesn't know the foot-dragging that has gone on for over 40 days. I mean, you're certainly intelligent enough to know that Obama dragged his heels in trying to stop the leak, aren't you?
Well, yes. Well, this is my thing. I don't know if he dragged his feet or not. It was BP's,
Well, let me help you with it since you don't know and I do. Here's what the New York Times says about Obama. For 3 weeks as the giant oil slick crept closer to the shore, officials from the White House, Coast Guard, Army Corps of Engineers, Fish and Wildlife, National Oceanic and Environmental Protection Agency debated the best approach. They fought with Louisiana, who was trying to build sand berms. What would you call that, stupidity or foot dragging?
Well, I think that was they shouldn't have done that. I don't think that was the proper thing to do. But my thing is this.
Well, wait, hold on. What I'm saying to you, this was a series of bureaucracies under Obama's direct command, and the direction from him at the top was not clear. There was no accountability. None of the heads of these groups have been fired for dragging their feet while the oil spilled into the marshes.
Okay. Well, this is what I want to say, if you let me get a word in, all right?
Well, I don't mind you getting a word in, but it's got to be an educated word. Otherwise, there's gibberish out there.
Well, I'm a little nervous, and it's my first time, but I got some pressing issues that I want to get out. You know, I got some things I want to talk to you about. My thing is this. If Clinton or Obama would have did half the things that Bush did to this country, they would have tarred and feathered them and ran them out of town.
All right, here we go again. So here we go again. Again, Bush did it. Why don't you just blame Nixon and Goldwater?
Well, I'm just going to say this, you know, and I'm also...
You don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're nothing but an Obama worshiper. There's nothing your boss, Obama, can do that's wrong. Isn't that correct? That no matter what he does, he'll be 100% with you. Is that right?
Actually, he's done some things that I don't agree with. But my thing is this, I'm upset...
Well, he's absolutely failed with regard to the cleanup. He dragged his heels. He's shown a lack of involvement. He's failed at every turn to show any executive authority whatsoever. And so he's cleverly, with little help from his Harvard lawyers, passed the buck to BP. There's a lot of blame to go around, Carlos, and you certainly can't lay it all on the feet of the people who were drilling that well.
Right. Well, with this guy Feinberger that you mentioned, if what you say is correct about him, he's definitely connected. You know, he's part of the leak or something, and he's definitely connected.
Well, at least you're willing to listen. Feinberg is a lawyer who was involved in asbestos litigation claims, Holocaust litigation claims, the September 11th victims claims, the shootings of the Virginia Tech Fund. How does he get involved in all these things, Carlos?
He's probably in bed with him, but that...
Hold on. No, Carlos, at least we have common ground. Now, why would your man, who you have so much faith in, and you're entitled to have that faith, I don't intend to change your mind, why would he choose such a shady character as Kenneth Feinberg and give him a $20 billion slush fund to dispense as he wishes? Do you actually think the shrimp fishermen are going to be at the top of the list of Kenneth Feinberg?
Probably not. The Hurricane Katrina victims didn't get all the money that they should have. The bottom line is, you know, we're in a country right now, and there ain't but a few people controlling things. There ain't but a few people on top making decisions. And
all right, then we agree on that. And I have to have you ask yourself again. Just ask yourself again. If there's so much blame to go around, and BP is part of that blame, and it certainly is, why do you cut it off and say there's no blame in the Obama administration when there clearly is? I'll be right back.
Savage.
BP has agreed to set aside $20 billion to pay claims for damages resulting from this spill. This is not a cap. The people of the Gulf have my commitment that BP will meet its obligations to them.
It is not a cap. So Feinberg and Bromwich, two lawyers who know how to shake down companies, in my humble opinion, involved in asbestos litigation, Holocaust litigation, Agent Orange litigation, DES litigation. These are lawyers who've made their living by breaking companies. They had no problem with breaking companies. They had nothing to do with creating. These are people who were raised to destroy, not to create, in my opinion. He appoints Michael Bromwich to oversee offshore oil drilling, a guy who has never, ever, so far as I know, been on an oil rig, no experience with oil and gas, a Harvard lawyer whose only call to fame had been prosecuting Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal. Michael Bromwich is now in charge of Minerals Management Service, litigation partner in a law firm in Washington, D.C. And now he's in charge of the Minerals Management Service. Ladies and gentlemen, never before in American history has there been a regime of this nature, with so many trial lawyers running so many things they know so little about, with a president who has absolutely no executive experience, a president who has never led a platoon, let alone a company, let alone a brigade, let alone an army, who is now the commander-in-chief. And I want to talk about that. It came to me the other night. I was watching something on TV, and I won't tell you what it was because it's not relevant. And I realized that this man had seized total power of a country. They become not only the president of the country, but also the commander of the armed forces. This man, of course, is now the commander of the armed forces, even though he's obviously never fired a, so far as I know, a Daisy BB gun. This is something wrong with the United States government, the way it's structured, that the chief executive has so much power. The president was never supposed to be a king or a sovereign. The president was never supposed to have so much power. I could see him being the chief executive if he's competent in some executive practices, such as he built a $1 billion company on his own. This man's never, ever built anything on his own. He's only shuffled papers and accepted grants and awards because he's such a sterling genius. All right, so we're stuck with him. But how can you have confidence in this man as commander-in-chief of the United States military, when the man has never had any military experience? Why should our president have such extraordinary and absolute powers over so many aspects of our survival? Did you ever ask yourself these questions? And these questions are not limited to Obama only, by the way. Why should any president have such powers? Why is there such a belief in this country that a single man can know so much, that he can not only be the smartest of all businessmen that ever lived? That's why he's the chief executive. But he's the most heroic and the most visionary of all generals that ever led men, et cetera, and so on. Something's wrong with this picture. George Washington, he is not. This government is in such trouble. And we, the people, are in bigger trouble because we support this gang. And unless we change the structure of this government, in other words, the structure of the government is the problem. A two-party system, two gangs cutting up the spoils. Well, look what it's led to. A president called Obama and senators like Dodd, who take stimulus money and give it to an Indian gambling casino, all in the name of job creation. Two-party system? What two parties are these? Are either of them the American Party, Democrat and Republican Party, and they stand for the American people? No, there's actually a third party called the American People Party, but it doesn't exist. It is emerging. It's in its infancy. It has a shape now. It's an embryo. It's called the Tea Parties. It's embryonic. It's embryonic, but as you well know, the powers that be believe in abortion. They will abort life in a womb, and they will abort life in the vacuum, in the womb of politics. They are trying to abort this baby called the American Party in the Tea Parties because they recognize that this is the honest party, unlike themselves. They're trying every chemical and every trick known to mankind, from sewing needles to thalidomide, to abort the Tea Parties. They're trying every poison known to the political process, from debasing the Tea Parties with lies about racist slurs, when in fact there was one of their own the other day, the year-old white congressman from South Carolina who strangled a young reporter who dared ask him a question. If it was anyone else in the Republican Party who did that, he would have been thrown out of office. But he got away with it because, as in The Godfather, they have friends in the media who covered that right up. Were it not for guys like Andrew Breitbart and Matt Drudge and others, we'd be living in a dictatorship right now, a dictatorship run by the government media complex. And so, again, I have to say to you, there is a third party emerging. It's called the American Party. You know it as the Tea Parties. It's an embryo right now, but it's very much alive. And the gangs are trying to poison it with lies and kill it with deceit, just as they believe in aborting fetuses unto the ninth month. They will believe in aborting this Tea Party right unto the 12th month of the election. And I'm not Nostradamus. I'm Michael Savage.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Currently, under federal law, there is a $75 million cap on how much oil companies could, under certain circumstances, be required to pay for economic damages resulting from a spill such as this. That amount, obviously, would be insufficient.
You were drilling 18,000 feet below the sea. If you made mistakes, the consequences of those would be catastrophic, and in fact have turned out to be catastrophic. Don't you feel any sense of responsibility for these decisions?
I feel a great sense of responsibility for the accident. We need to allow...
How about for the decisions that made the accident more likely?
We need to determine what were the critical decisions, and...
Did you get my letter, and did you review it?
I've read your letter, Chairman,
and I've reviewed it. And you realize in the letter we asked you to be prepared to discuss these issues?
As I've said, I've seen the documents... following your letter, and I can't pass judgment on those decisions.
Even though you've worked 28 years in the oil industry?
Shut your mouth, you wide-nostriled pig, you. I'm so sick of listening to that warthog, Congressman Nostrilman. I'd like to see hearings on where he's put that nose over the last 10 years to have turned himself into a Ringling Brothers freak. That's what I'd like to see hearings on. You're watching a Al Capone-like shakedown of a legitimate company. We don't know that there was negligence, by the way. We know there was an accident. That is true. And we know that Obama admitted the law says it's a $60 million or whatever the number is, maximum. And what, he can suddenly say it should be $20 billion and there's no cap on it? Just as there's no cap on the spill now, there's no cap on what this gangster regime will do to break another company. We are watching a massive deceit. Now, there's no question in my mind that there should be hearings, but they shouldn't stop with BP and Halliburton. They should only begin with BP and Halliburton. Phase two should be hearings on Obama's foot dragging. The heads of the following departments should be called and answer why they dragged their feet for 3 weeks. That would be the White House, the Coast Guard, the Army Corps of Engineers, Fish and Wildlife Service, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the EPA. The heads of those administrations should be called, and they should answer to the American people as to why they took 3 weeks. 3 weeks to answer officials in Louisiana who were trying over and over again to win federal permission to build sand barriers to protect the wetlands, and they did nothing. Instead, the EPA and these other losers were debating the best approach. They were busy studying the issues. This is not the first oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico, by the way. Not the first at all. There have been others. But I'd like to ask you a question. If BP is so negligent and there's such a fragile ecosystem down there, why are five or six other countries still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico while BP has been stopped by the Obama administration? China's drilling. Russia's drilling. I don't know the names of the other countries, but they're drilling away. They're drilling and drilling and drilling. They're drilling and they're sucking the oil out of the earth, out of the core. And, of course, BP has been stopped, and yet the Obama administration wants the money from BP to pay a compensation fund. Where's the money supposed to come from? The air? It has to come from the drilling. How do you think they make their money? But you see, to a lawyer from Harvard who moved ahead through affirmative action, he doesn't understand that you actually have to produce something to earn something. He just got his way by, well, being in the right place at the right time and threatening to sue. The way Kagan got in the right place at the right time, by threatening to sue. She became the dean of the Harvard Law School. Like it used to mean something, it doesn't mean it anymore. The Ivy League is the most incestuous, infected places on earth, of the Ivy League today. The most backward, backwater of the Gulf would have far more intelligent people than the faculties at the Harvard Law School today. And yet they've been called in to administer the slush fund. Case in point. I'll have to say again till you get it through your head that the sharks have been released by Obama. The sharks have names. Kenneth Feinberg has been given a $20 billion fund to start with to pay damage claims from the spill. Now, before we look at Kenneth Feinberg's sterling background in other such disbursements, I want to ask you something. Do you think that most, some, or none of the above will go to the actual people in the Gulf? How much of the $20 billion do you think is going to go to an Indian gambling casino in the Gulf or to ward politicians to build up the Democrat base in an otherwise Republican state? Make no mistake about it. Louisiana is largely a Republican state. And yet, now they have an opportunity, right out of the Chicago playbook, to take the $20 billion and spend it any way they want with no oversight. Who's overseeing Kenneth Feinberg? Nobody. See, old Kenneth Feinberg went to NYU Law. As you well know, I know a lot about NYU Law. Some of the worst people on the planet have come from that hellhole. They've gone forth and destroyed the earth. Feinberg was a court-appointed settlement master. Sorry. My voice is going again. I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here are the foreign countries that are still drilling in the Gulf of Mexico: England, Russia, Cuba, China, Spain, Norway, India, Malaysia, Venezuela, Vietnam, Brazil. They're still drilling. They're still drilling. Are you to believe that BP had lower safety standards than these drilling rigs? I don't believe it. There are only a few companies in the world that can do work like this, by the way. And none of these companies were created by people with law degrees from Harvard. None of these companies are managed by people who went to Harvard in any department. Harvard teaches people how to cheat and how to steal. I know someone in the family, a distant relative who went to Harvard Law. And in her senior year, as she was graduating, her professor said to her and the other graduates, look for your first lawsuits within your own family. I'm not making this up. And now we have a Harvard lawyer running the country. So he appoints Kenneth Feinberg to disperse the first $20 billion. How much of that money do you think will actually reach the Gulf fishermen? Feinberg dispersed the money from asbestos litigation. We know how honorable those men are. I know a low-life, verminous lawyer who I went to college with who has never worked a day in his life, and he's stolen from companies that built products that people needed that happened to have asbestos in it. And this rat, his entire life, he's been a Democrat and pats himself on the back for being better than everybody else, a criminal. His father was a crooked lawyer just like him, lived off asbestos litigation. But this one makes this crumb bum that I know look like what he is, a flea. Feinberg is so big in this racket that he dispersed money based on the Agent Orange cases. He dispersed money on the DES cases. He dispersed money on the allocation of legal fees in the Holocaust slave labor litigation. Perhaps one of the most despicable chapters in the history of jurisprudence is the Holocaust slave labor litigation. I can spend weeks on what these lawyers have done in the name of the Holocaust, where millions of people were tortured and killed and their assets stolen. Instead of the money going to victims, most of that money went to the lawyers. And old Feinberg was involved in that because he's such a good man. Think of Larry David with a law degree from NYU, who knows no bounds. Think of Woody Allen, who instead of making movies, went to NYU Law School and busts companies. But if you think that Feinberg's bad, I got another one for you. Take a guess who Obama appointed to head up the Minerals Management Service, an agency that oversees offshore oil drilling. Did he choose someone from Louisiana or Texas who has experience in oil rigs? No. Did he choose anyone in the oil and gas business? No. He chose Michael Bromwich, a Harvard-educated lawyer who's never worked in oil and gas, but he did prosecute Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal. He investigated misconduct of the FBI. Bromwich investigated the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department. Bromwich sued prisons for not providing sufficient medical care for felons. And that man is now in charge of the Minerals Management Service, appointed by none other than the imposter himself. When you have a flawed leader, he chooses flawed lieutenants. And so therefore, ladies and gentlemen, don't expect justice. And the difference between law and justice, as you well, there's a chasm. Let's put it to you, there's a chasm between law and justice that is quite wide. Don't assume that law and justice go together. In fact, assume that there's a chasm between law and justice that is almost insurmountable. You need some rocket ship that hasn't been invented to get across that chasm in most cases. People say, how does this happen? How did this happen in the court? How did that happen in the court? How did a woman whose husband cheated on her and stole money out of the house that they had together to spend it on drugs and on prostitutes and on other women, how does that woman wind up with nothing? Just look no further than the judge. Just look no further than matrimonial law itself. Who was it written by? How does it happen that 6 million Jews get annihilated in the Holocaust and that 50 years later Germany is sued on behalf of the victims of the Holocaust? And the money doesn't go to the victims, families, the survivors. Most of it goes to the lawyers who sued Germany. And now these people are running the United States of America. I'm not making it up. If I were, you could yell at me. You could call me names. You could say anything you wanted about me. But I'm not making it up. I'm giving you the naked, bald, ugly, disgusting truth of who you picked to be the president of the United States and the kind of people he is dredging up from the lowest law firms in America. Class action lawyers are the lowest of the low. Many lawyers are honorable. There's not one honorable class action lawyer in America. Every last one of them is a gangster. In my opinion, see, I lost my voice because I get so emotional over this. They should be arrested. If there was justice in this country, class action lawyers would be arrested, their assets seized onto their third generation. Their grandchildren would be taken out of university and be forced to clean toilet bowls in Tijuana until there's restitution made to the companies that these scum-sucking grandfathers of theirs took out of companies. But they're running America, aren't they? All Bush and the Republicans had to do was talk about tort reform, and they went insane. They went to Saudi Arabia. They went to China. They went to the Palestinians. They went anywhere to get the money to put in this imposter because they were terrified. Terrified they were that some tort reform would go in place and their racket would be ended. But they were right. They won. And take a look who's running the country. And look at the power they have now. Asbestos, the Holocaust, DES, Agent Orange, and now oil. At last, they've hit the big time. Now they can sink their rat-like teeth into honorable businesses like oil drilling companies. Yep, my friends, it gets worse by the day under this regime. I think I'm going to take a break for the moment and play something more delightful for you, a little story from my past, a story I wrote about in Psychological Nudity, and then I'll be right back. When I was a kid, every summer, I loved the summer. What kid didn't? Because in those days, you didn't go to summer school, you didn't go to a camp to advance your mathematical knowledge, another to advance your sports knowledge, another to lose your tubby waist. You went and had fun for the whole summer. And we were kind of poor, so what we did was, to get out of the hot inner city, the family rented a small cottage with all the other families from the neighborhood and relatives up in the cool mountains called the Catskill Mountains, and they were known as bungalow colonies because you got basically a one-room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, boom. And your whole family was in there, but they were like, the whole thing was filled with your friends and their parents, so it became like a little village. Naturally, it was paradise because every other parent was your parent, and you reverted back to like another time in history, so it was wonderful. We'd play Indians out in the woods, and we'd carve trees and make canoes. God knows what we did. So in one of these places, there was a guy who was a caretaker who lived in an old abandoned barn with his wife, believe it or not. And he like mowed the lawn. He had the hammer, fixed the hammer. His name was Woodchuck Bill. And us kids, it was like a Tom Sawyer thing. We loved Woodchuck Bill. Kids loved. Now remember, he was not a bum. See, today they're bum. They're homeless. He was what was known as a hobo in those days. And there were people who were hobos. They were sort of respectable in their own way. That was his job category. He was like hobo. He would put it on the IRS. Like, what do you do? Job category, hobo. I don't know what he made, next to nothing. But he lived up in this, as I say, ramshackle barn-like structure with his. He had a wife, actually. And Woodchuck Bill would regale us kids with his stories. And he was a big guy with a big stomach on him. So the story begins with him saying, all right, kids, come over here. Today, they probably arrest him for molestation, just for even telling us a story. Some freak would arrest him. He says, all right, I want all of you to punch me in the stomach. Now, right away, that's rape today. It's raping a child in some way. So we'd all go up with our skinny little arms. We're 9, 8, 7, and punch him in the stomach, and nothing would happen. So naturally, we thought he was Superman. He must have been pretty strong. I mean, if you think about it, because they're 8-year-old kids that can give you quite a belt even today. Anyway, so we all hit him, and we realized we were nothing compared to Woodchuck Bill. Then we'd sit at his feet, and he would tell us stories. He'd say, I remember to this day, he would say, well, I've seen hurricanes and I've seen tornadoes. Well, we sat spellbound, like really out of a book from the 19th century. So what I liked most about Woodchuck Bill was that he lived in this barn with almost nothing. He had his few pots and pans, him and his wife, and they hung from like hooks over the thing, and they actually cooked in there. But he said he used to eat woodchucks. We'd say, Bill, what do you eat? He said, we eat woodchucks. Who knows if he's telling the truth? I don't know if you can eat a woodchuck. And that's the Woodchuck Bill story.
Savage.
I had a nutty friend, a real SOB, a piece of garbage. He was a miserable rat, even as a kid, a miserable rat, because he had a crazy mother who was on Benzedrine to lose weight. She went to some crazy doctor in Jersey who put her on speed. She'd come back nuts. I mean, crazy. And she'd drive the pink Cadillac. They had a little more money than everyone else. The father was hardworking. She was a nothing. Always on Benzedrine and a wacko. She was so crazy that she would take a dog chain. She once did this and beat herself across the wrists and they were bleeding. So when the husband came home at night, like from working all day from some delivery route that he owned, he had a franchise, whatever, she came screaming and she said, Joe, look what your son did to me. Look what he did to me. And the father would go upstairs and he had a fist fight with the son because the crazy mother said that the son did this to her wrist when she did it herself. Can you believe this kind of situation? So I have no compassion for him. He was a rat before that, and he's still a rat. He's still a no-good, Nick. But he was a good friend of mine when I was in the fifth grade because who knows? You don't know people. And since I was sort of a mischievous child, naturally I sought out the more mischievous of the students, those who fidgeted the most, had the brightest eyes, and never listened to the teacher. They were my kind of people. Today already they put us into Ritalin therapy and turn us into robots. I wouldn't be on the radio today. I'd be like an accountant somewhere in a prison. I'd be counting underwear for a prison somewhere to make sure that the underwear didn't get stolen. But the long and short was, yeah, the crazy mother. That doesn't excuse him for being nuts. As years went on, one of the kids in the neighborhood became a very famous, two of them became famous rock and roll singers, two, out of Queens. I won't mention their names. One had a big hit at 11 or 13 years old. He was always more mature than us. He had, like, women. You know, like guys at 13, like the guys with a pompadour, and he had like a girlfriend 19. I never understood that. We were still like dreaming. This guy had like a woman. You know, she was 20. I don't know how they got that, like through the music business. So he went and did a tour, this musician, in Japan at 14, dropped out of high school. He had one song. It was a huge hit, like 145. I don't remember. It wasn't Runaround Sue, but it was in that genre. So he goes to Japan, a big tour. The Japanese always liked American rock and rollers. Now he comes back. Now it's years later. Now he's on his behind. And he's got nothing. So he becomes a U.S. postman. I swear to God, years later, the same rock and roller who had the Jaguar before anyone could even drive, the blue Jaguar, the cuff that stood out of the jacket, the pompadour, became a postman. There's nothing wrong with being a postman, but, you know, you start out as a rock and roller and you end up as a postman. That's a pretty hard row, you know what I'm saying? It's better to start out as a postman and end up as a rock and roll star. Let me tell you, he had a blue Jaguar, an XK140 MC drophead coupe. To this day, I want that car. I have a Ferrari. I still want that 56 XK140 drophead coupe. So that bad kid, going back now to the bad kid whose mother beat herself on the arm. So we like to go around all over New York by subway, and we were like 12, 13. We went everywhere. 12, 13, 14, Manhattan, Hubert's Flea Circus. Down in the bowels of the basement of the subways, there were guys selling, like, they weren't porno magazines, they were soft core. And the old, you see the old geezers there lining up looking at the magazines. We try to, like, you look at them, hey, kid, get out of here, get out of here, kid, get out of here. You know, that kind of thing. So we used to like to go to Coney Island, and they had exhibits. I don't know how to describe it. They were like mannequins of wax figures. And there were some of them were scary as heck. Well, one of them was of George Metetsky, the mad bomber of the subway. And it was so lifelike. Like, if you were a kid 12 and you had just been on a New York subway car in the heat for an hour and you went out to Coney Island and you stood outside one of those exhibits and you looked in, they showed him like in a jail cell. The guy looked like he was going to come out of the cell and strangle you. Well, adjacent to that mad bomber display, there was another guy. This scared me to this day. I have nightmares about him. It showed a guy, I don't know what he did, dismembered girls or women. I don't remember what he did. He was really bad, this one. And he looked like ordinary Joe, white guy, ordinary guy. And they found him. I remember it was like a mad thing in New York. They didn't know what to do. Girls were being found dismembered. Finally, they tracked this nut down to a chicken farm in New Jersey. I don't remember his name. And he's got like a corpse in a trunk under the bed. I mean, the whole thing, man. So this exhibit in Coney Island of the wax figure shows this guy reconstructed in wax in a little room in the back of a chicken farm with a dismembered girl's body in a trunk, and he's got like blood on his feet with like a blank stare at you, and they show you like the feet and the hands and the blood. It was stuff that today they could never ever show you, but life was richer as a result. For example, they had freak shows in those days. A genuine freak show is not so bad. The freak had a job. If I went to Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey, I didn't go for the horse or the elephant. I went for the freak show in the back. The one-breasted man, the half-bearded woman, the microcephalic. In other words, the people who today became politicians, in my day, they were in the back room of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey without a Windsor nut. Or in another display, the same people today you might find on CNN or ABC or CBS, you know, after some surgery, they were in the freak show too. You know, half man, half woman, half human, half amoeba. And it was wonderful. I like the whole thing. You eat the popcorn, you walk around, you gape at the freak, you thank God that you're not like them. But the truth of the matter is, you say, well, it's exploited with the freak. No, if you ask freaks, I mean, a lot of them call them that today. You ask someone, a freak of nature like that, they liked being in a freak show. They made a good living. They were around other abnormal people. They had a little, you know, world, a social world. They had sex, some of them, with each other. They socialize. Today, what? They sit at home watching television on welfare? You think that's better for a freak? No. So there's something to be said for going back to the America of the 1950s. Please don't bring up the Civil Rights Act. Do me a favor. I mean, America of the 1950s with a Civil Rights Act. Can we move on now? It was a better country. Okay, everyone's equal, but give me back the freak show. And give me back the exhibit of the guy that a kid could see there with a nut. Because, you know, why should a kid see that? A kid should see that to understand there are dangers in the world. Certain people are really crazy and bad.
Savage.
For example, the people in the Obama administration should be in a wax museum. Maybe in 50 years from now, someone will put together a picture of them. And in this picture, you will see Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Henry Waxman in wax, sitting in all their glory. And there'll be little statements that say, during a period in American history, the people were hoodwinked. This regime was put in power and almost destroyed all freedoms in America. The level of incompetence and criminality had never been seen before, but eventually the people rose up and they were found guilty and they were jailed. I mean, okay, yeah, right, it'll really happen. I'll give you a little example for those of you who are naive and don't know how real this is. This just came out. Governor Jindal, Louisiana governor, ordered barges to begin vacuuming crude oil out of the state's oil-soaked waters. Today, those barges are sitting idle. What's most amazing is that the barges were sucking oil out of the water. 16 barges were then made idle today, even though they were sucking up thousands of gallons of BP's oil as recently as Tuesday. Why were these oil-sucking barges stopped? Why? Tell me why. They sucked it out of the Gulf. They put it into the barge. Then workers in hazmat suits and gas masks pumped the oil out of the Louisiana waters and into steel tanks. It was just simply a homegrown idea for men who work in the area, not Harvard gangsters, not Michael Bromwich or Keith Feinberg. No guys who know what they were doing came up with it. But take a guess what happened. Obama's Coast Guard morons came in and shut them down, said Governor Jindal. You hear this? They were sucking the oil out of the Gulf. And the Coast Guard morons came in and said, shut down those barges, cease and desist, stop sucking up that oil. Now, why would the Coast Guard do that? You're not going to believe this, because I'm going to tell you. The Coast Guard stopped this because they needed to confirm that the barges had fire extinguishers and life vests aboard. And then they had to contact the people who built the barges to make sure they did so meeting OSHA standards. And so the Coast Guard stopped the cleanup. Now, I don't actually believe that they stopped the barges to see if there were fire extinguishers and life vests. This is classic union activity. This is how it's done when you want to stop something under the guise of legality. They stopped it because they didn't like the cleanup being working. They don't want it cleaned up, don't you understand? The longer they can let it seep, the more damage they can cause and the more money they can steal from BP. Don't you understand what's going on right in front of your noses? Don't you see it for what it is? All of you stupid environmental children, all of you stupid children, all of you stupid environmental Democrats, don't you see what this gang has done to you? How they've used you like the useful idiots you are? Lenin wrote about you, but you didn't know it because you think you're as smart as Woody Allen or Larry David. You got a laugh and an answer for everything. Everything is a mockery. Everyone's below you. No one's as smart as you. No one could get a word in edgewise around you from the time you were a little kid. You're smarter than everybody. So therefore, you know everything. But you don't know that you're just the useful idiot to this gang that is using you like the useful idiots you are. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is exactly what Governor Jindal is talking about when he says taking things into his own hands, trying to now vacuum up the oil. Take a look. A thick black muck has settled in, easily a few inches thick. And all along the coast, local leaders arming their own front lines, no longer waiting for federal approval. In Okaloosa County, Florida, an emergency meeting where leaders decided to take on the fight themselves.
The Coast Guard wants to come and take us off in chains or handcuffs. We'll do that to protect our inlets and our waterways down here.
A right to fight the Coast Guard with any tools that they have at their disposal. I believe that the Coast Guard, I'm calling it the Coast Misguard, is purposely stopping the rounding up of the oil. I told you what just happened. You don't want to believe me because many of you are like Woody Allen. You hate America. You distrust the working man and the working woman. And you think that you have a wisecrack for everybody in the world and you know more than everybody. Here is a case in point, prima facie evidence of either incompetence or malfeasance on the part of Obama. You had the Coast Guard stop them from taking the oil off the surface of the water because they didn't have life vests and they didn't have permits to suck the oil out of the water. This is what you get when you have an imposter for a president and when you have lawyers from Harvard managing the Coast Guard, managing this and managing that. I'm going to take your calls on the Savage Nation. Michael in San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Hi. I want to say I am a liberal, but I'm very upset with the Gulf oil spill. I think no one is right. BP's not right, and Obama is not right on this one.
All right, but, you know, a statement like that has no merit whatsoever. Did you hear a word I just said about the Coast Guard under Obama stopping the oil cleanup because they didn't have a permit?
That is a part of what is messed up with this oil spill. Politics should be put aside here. It should be we all go in and we all help. It shouldn't be...
What do you mean we all go? What the hell do you know about cleaning up oil? What do you mean we help? What do you... You know, I don't know who you are, lady, but it seems to me that the surgeon performed a mistake when he went the deep down into your deep tissue. Gold just jumped today. Fresh economic worries trigger rush into gold. Advanced to $12.44 an ounce. It's unbelievable. Look, you know I have a gold advertiser, and this is not an infomercial, but I put a week's salary into gold the other day. I really did. I think that we're just seeing the beginning of what's coming here in this country under this administration. I believe that the know-nothing drug addicts in the media and the know-nothing drug addicts in the government, and the know-nothing drug addicts in the government media complex are going to kill all of us unless something dramatic occurs in this country. I have never seen anything as naked as I am seeing today when I see that the governor of Louisiana, with local guys, figured out, bring out a barge, suck up the oil, put it in the barge, then pump it out of the barge into steel tanks. They were doing it. And so what did old bummer do? What did that moron, that Captain Kangaroo head of the Coast Guard do? Again, it kept wheeling them out. General this, Admiral that, these schmucks, they look like ushers in a Lois Valencia to me, these putzes. Guy comes out and says, you can't pump the oil. Why? We want to see a permit for a life preserver. Then we want to see who built the barge, if it's safety, if it was built with the proper permits. Can you believe that Obama is the president of the United States? So now either this is incompetence or malfeasance, meaning either they don't know what they're doing or they're doing it on purpose in order to make the oil spread so they can make more damage and break out, bust out BP for even more claims, which they control, and cut the skim off the top, take the vig off the top of the money. You think that $20 billion is going to the shrimpers? You're out of your mind. You're crazy. Half that money's going to wind up in Martha's Vineyard by this summer. One way or the other, the gangsters in Martha's Vineyard who put Obama in power are going to get some of that $20 billion. After all, it's not easy to keep a fleet of Gulf Streams going, is it? And all the while claim you're an environmentalist like Larry David's wife, who was apparently shtupping Al Gore, according to the... We didn't even get into the parody of Al Gore making it with a comedian's ex-wife. It's unbelievable to me. Him and Tip. I mean, the whole thing is becoming a parody of itself. Parody of itself. German student attacks Hell's Angels with puppy. Did you see that story? Oh, don't get me started with that. Who was that call of the woman? Who did she mention? A guy I never heard of. A guy who wishes in his wildest nightmares he had a radio show. They all want a radio show. Everybody wants to be in the business. See, these guys in television, you know that they all have writers? Let me spend 30 seconds on that. You take a moron like Bill Maher. You take an idiot like Colbert. You take any one of those schmucks, and the writers are off for a week. They're not on the air. Did you know that? Because they don't write their own material. They read teleprompters like your president. Do you understand that you're watching a show when you watch those shows, written by very intelligent deviants with curly hair and big glasses who write the stuff for them? Don't you remember during the writer's strike who was off the air? Letterman was off the air. The car collector was off the air. That fat guy who looks like Lou Costello, I don't know his name, was off the air. All the funny men were off the air during the writer's strike. Why was that? Because they're nothing but puppets. The only time I'm off the air is when my voice failed me a few days. So I'm back. The laryngitis is about 50%. It broke again in the second hour today. I've been doing the best I could. But that's it. I got all sorts of tricks that got me back on the air. All of the herbs that I use and the vitamins that I use. I have a certain vitamin A that I never told you about. It's far more powerful than vitamin C. One of the most mysteriously important vitamins when you're sick is vitamin A. And the doctors never write about it or talk about it because I didn't write about it 30 years ago, so they don't know about it yet. I wrote almost all the health books that they're referring to that they ripped off and rewrote under their own names. Oh, antioxidant, methionine. Yeah, right. I wrote it in 1972. They're all experts on it. Well, soon I'm going to come out. I think I'm going to, for your sake, not mine, because I don't need the money. I think I'm going to put out this formula I use on myself. A certain type of vitamin A and certain herbs that I put together for myself. So help me God, it's almost miraculous. Tomorrow I could have no voice. Okay, so I gotta wait before I see how long it takes. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So you saw the charade today. The government media complex, which works for the Democrats and the trial lawyers, very cleverly held a hearing attacking BP without questioning the incompetence or the malfeasance on the part of the Obama administration with regard to the foot dragging or the absolute desire to see the oil spread so they can wreak more havoc on the environment to cause more damage and make higher claims against BP and bust out a company the way a sporting goods store was broken out, busted out by the gangsters in The Sopranos. It's no different. Make no mistake about it, America is living through a reign of terror. We're living through a reign of terror. Just as surely as I stand here, a reign of terror conducted by lawyers who have no conscience, lawyers who have no loyalty to this nation, lawyers who would rather see the country go up in smoke than see their grandchildren have a future, lawyers without a conscience who are told when they graduate from Harvard Law, look within your family for your first lawsuit. These rats with sharp teeth have now looked within their nation for their livelihood. And boy, have they ever found it. I'm Michael Savage. Tune in, because I'll be here with God's will and your listenership.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
ashamed of what happened in the White House yesterday. I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown. In this case, a $20 billion shakedown, with the Attorney General of the United States, who is legitimately conducting a criminal investigation and has every right to do so to protect the interests of the American people, participating in what amounts to a $20 billion slush fund.
You know, when gangsters in the 1920s used to run protection rackets, they'd have one of their goons throw a rock through the window of a store to threaten the owner. Then they demand money from the owner to protect them. As far as I'm concerned, Obama has thrown a rock through the window of BP, and Al Capone is laughing in his grave. What do you think Obama will have done to our nation in 6 months from now, a year from now, 18 months from now, 2 years from now? You know, there was a TV company called Panasonic, and years ago they had a slogan, "We're slightly ahead of our time." Well, that's good, because if you're too far ahead of your time, people think that you're crazy. Michael Savage, am I slightly ahead of my time or too ahead of my time? How much do you think Obama's shark, the lawyer Ken Feinberg, got for dispersing money to victims of 9/11 and the Holocaust? How much do you think went into the victims' pockets, and how much do you think went into Feinberg's pockets? Huh? Anyone have the answer? Well, he's the shark that was picked to disperse the $20 billion shaken down from BP. Who's Feinberg? Feinberg was the one who dispensed hundreds of millions of dollars to victims of 9/11. Now he's got $20 billion to play with. Do you know that Feinberg went to NYU Law School? Oh, yeah. Did you know that Feinberg was a special settlement master in cases including Agent Orange, asbestos personal injury litigation? Did you know that Feinberg was one of the lawyers who determined the allocation of legal fees in the Holocaust slave labor litigation? How much of the money that went through this man's hands went to him, and how much went to the victims of asbestos, the Holocaust, and other such cases? Does anyone have the answer? Well, Feinberg is the son of a tire merchant, and his father told him to become a lawyer, not an actor. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, had he only listened to his father. But if you think Feinberg is slimy, it gets worse. Take a guess who Obama today appointed to oversee offshore oil drilling as the new director of the Minerals Management Service. Someone from Louisiana? No. Someone from Texas? No. Someone who's worked in the drilling business? No. He's appointed Michael Bromwich, a lawyer from Harvard. And the Harvard lawyer, Bromwich, no experience in the oil business, but he did prosecute Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal. So you see, this is an old boy, old girl network of the lowest legal vermin the country has ever seen. The lowest legal vermin the world has ever seen is now running America. The trial lawyers have destroyed this country, and they've only gotten started, in my humble opinion. Sharks in the water smell blood, and they're circling to take advantage of the country's biggest environmental disaster. Who are they? As I said, there's Michael Bromwich, director of MMS, no experience with gas and oil. He's a Washington lawyer, and so he's going to help. So he's going to help the people of Louisiana. You know, Bromwich made sure that inmates in Delaware prisons got gold-plated health care because the federal government sued the state. Well, Obama's piranhas smell blood in the water, and they're after BP. And Henry Nostrelman, you know, the fellow with the very large nostrils, was right there attacking the calm, sane, sensible CEO of BP, Tony Hayward.
You were drilling 18,000 feet below the sea. If you made mistakes, the consequences of those would be catastrophic, and in fact have turned out to be catastrophic. Don't you feel any sense of responsibility for these decisions?
I feel a great sense of responsibility for the accident. We need to allow...
How about for the decisions that made the accident more likely?
We need to determine what were the critical decisions, and...
Did you get my letter, and did you review it?
I've read your letter, Chairman,
and I've reviewed it. And you realize in the letter we asked you to be prepared to discuss these issues?
As I've said, I've seen the documents following your letter, and I can't pass judgment on those decisions.
Even though you've worked 28 years in the oil industry, you're the BP CEO, and you said safety is the biggest issue, and you have people under you making these kinds of decisions.
But Waxman, the dirtball that he is, wouldn't let up.
Do you disagree with the conclusion that this was riskier to use this particular well lining?
I'm not prepared to draw conclusions about this accident until such time as the investigation has concluded.
Well, this is an investigation. That's what this committee is doing. It's an investigatory committee. And we expect you to cooperate with us. Are you failing to cooperate with other investigators as well? Because they're going to have a hard time reaching conclusions if you stonewall them, which is what we seem to be getting today.
I'm not stonewalling. I simply was not involved in the decision-making process.
Listen to this dirtbag, Waxman. Frankly, I'd rather see Hayward as president than Obama.
I've looked at the documents, and until the investigations are complete, both yours and others...
No, but that's somebody else's conclusion. What's your conclusion?
I haven't drawn a conclusion, Mr. Chairman.
I see. You're not taking responsibility. You're kicking the can down the road and acting as if you have nothing to do with this company and nothing to do with the decisions. I find that irresponsible.
Congressman Nostrilman should be kicked out of Congress. But frankly, from my point of view, there's one congressman, Joe Barton of Texas, who's being attacked, who actually said what is going on. He called it a shakedown.
I'm ashamed of what happened in the White House yesterday. I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown, in this case a $20 billion shakedown, with the Attorney General of the United States, who is legitimately conducting a criminal investigation and has every right to do so to protect the interests of the American people, participating in what amounts to a $20 billion slush fund that's unprecedented in our nation's history, that's got no legal standing, and which sets, I think, a terrible precedent for the future.
Of course, not only were Obama's legal goons raking BP over the coals, it seems like some professional protesters were put into the hearings as well.
Chairman Waxman, Chairman Stu... Chairman okay. Stupak, Ranking Members Barton. Is this spin, please, sir?
Let him talk, and when he finally did, Tony Hayward, the CEO of BP, acted responsibly, unlike most of the congressmen in the room.
I'm here today because I have a responsibility to the American people to do my best to explain what BP has done, is doing, and will do in the future to respond to this terrible accident. First, we're doing everything we can to secure the well, and in the meantime, contain the flow of oil. We're currently drilling two relief wells. We believe they represent the ultimate solution. We will pay all legitimate claims for losses and damages caused by the spill. Those are not just words. We've already paid out more than $95 million, and we've announced an independent claims facility headed by Ken Feinberg to ensure the process is as fair, transparent, and rapid as possible.
And what's old Hillary Clinton doing while all this is going on? She's telling Latin America that Chairman Obama is going to sue Arizona for defending its borders. What the hell is she doing in South America?
President Obama has spoken out against the law because he thinks that the federal government should be determining immigration policy. Mm-hmm. And the Justice Department, under his direction, will be bringing a lawsuit against the act. But the more important commitment that President Obama has made is to try to introduce and pass comprehensive immigration reform. That is what we need. Everyone knows it, and the president is committed to doing it.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. The skunks are back outside my house. Oh, it's awful. Remember a few years ago, if you're a regular listener, I was plagued by skunks. I called in a Russian trapper. Somehow Russians know how to trap. I don't understand the connection, but they're like from the old country and they, well, actually that was 10 years ago. They're from the old world and many of them brought in skills that we have forgotten, that type of thing. Guy put out a trap within a day. The poor thing was in the cage for the tuna fish can. Scared to death when he showed it. I said, don't show it to me. He releases it in another over the bridge, and then they run around in the woods there, and then they call him up, and he says, yeah, I'll come get him. So then he gets it from there, and they releases it here. I think there's one skunk that's released by the same Russian trapper all over the area. But the skunk comes back, and he poisoned me the other night, 4:30. I almost went, I am so sensitive to that. I couldn't take it. I left the house 4:30 in the morning cursing. I call a guy up, and I said, you got to get the trapper here tomorrow. I can't take it anymore. I'm going crazy. And a trapper comes back again, and here's the trapper now put out the cage. So now I know it's full moon. I know I'm afraid. I'm intimidated to sleep at night. So the tree said to me, it must have been a liberal skunk that's back. Okay, very funny. Everyone's got a joke. I said, okay, I tell the jokes. You hire the trapper. Leave me out of that one. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. All right. Even while the oil continues to pour into the Gulf, the Obama administration is trying to pass a global warming agenda to raise our taxes. Joining us now from the Heritage Foundation is Ben Lieberman.
Thanks, Michael. Well, the global warming agenda continues to be pushed by its proponents here in the nation's capital, and it is just one more example of Washington being out of touch with the American people. Simply put, the American public does not buy global warming as some sort of crisis that justifies a hyper-expensive response in the midst of a recession. And the public is absolutely right to be skeptical about global warming and skeptical about multi-trillion dollar big government plans to address it. But as we have seen with healthcare, the fact that a policy is both bad and expensive and that it's unpopular doesn't seem to stop many current politicians. And the Obama administration and its allies in Congress are going ahead with trying to enact global warming measures that will jack up energy costs, kill jobs, and make the already struggling American economy even weaker. The latest gambit is to try to tie cap-and-trade legislation or other global warming policies to the oil spill. Now, granted, Congress should eventually address the oil spill and enact legislation, but it should enact sensible measures specific to the oil spill. And that should not happen right now. We should first find out what went wrong, why the explosion and leak happened in the first place, and why the attempts to cap the well failed for so many weeks, and why the cleanup isn't going any better. Once the facts are in, Congress can fashion any necessary changes to the law to reduce the likelihood of a repeat spill and to improve the response if there is one. That's the sensible response to the oil spill, and one that should occur after several more months of investigation and reflection. But instead, what we're seeing from Washington right now is the line from Obama's Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel, don't let a good crisis go to waste. They're trying to push the global warming agenda as somehow a sound response to the oil spill, when in reality it would do next to nothing to clean up the Gulf or avoid a repeat, but would cause trillions of dollars of collateral economic damage. The logic between the cap-and-trade legislation and oil spills is tenuous at best.
Why do you say that?
Yes, these cap-and-trade bills are a massive energy tax that would drive up the price of gasoline, and higher energy prices would force Americans to drive a lot less. And lower demand for gasoline means lower demand for oil, thus less drilling. So in this indirect and roundabout way, it would slightly reduce the likelihood of future spills. But the American people have more sense than that. What really does make sense is changes to the laws requiring better prevention of leaks, better cleanups when they do occur, direct measures to deal with the spill in the Gulf. What doesn't make sense is deliberately jacking up the price at the pump, which is what cap and trade would do. Even worse, cap and trade, such as the Kerry-Lieberman bill now before the Senate, would primarily target coal and not oil. Coal is the energy source America has in greatest abundance, and it currently is used to supply half of America's electricity. Since coal is also the biggest source of the carbon dioxide emissions some blame for global warming, it would be the main victim under cap and trade. The resulting impact on electric bills would be very significant for homeowners, and the impact of higher electricity prices on the business sector would kill over 1 million jobs, especially jobs in the manufacturing sector. Some of these jobs would be destroyed entirely, while others would be outsourced to nations like China and India that have no intention of imposing energy price boosting and costly global warming measures on their economy. There's one big difference between the global warming crisis and the oil spill in the Gulf, and that's that the oil spill is real. If the Obama administration and Congress are truly serious about addressing the oil spill, they should drop their ill-advised global warming agenda and focus on what really needs to be done in the Gulf to clean up the oil and make future drilling safer.
Thanks for the report, Ben.
Thank you.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, we've talked about the anti-Israel media coverage and our own administration seeming to, well, not care if Israel survives or not, which is a real change in direction, don't you think? Joining us now is an editor from the Jerusalem Post, Carolyn Glick, who lives in Israel. Carolyn Glick, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on your show. It's been a long time. I've listened to you for years, and it's good to finally be on your show.
Living in Israel, how did you see the flotilla incident and how it was handled?
I think that the overwhelming majority of Israelis are very unified in our understanding that the Turkish Hamas flotilla that tried to force its way through Israel's lawful blockade of the Gaza coast was an attempt to aid and abet a terrorist organization that is dedicated to destroying Israel, and that the international reaction to their attempt to do so and Israel's forcible takeover of the ships in the Turkish Hamas flotilla. I think that the reaction, we've seen it also reflected in opinion polling numbers, that the overwhelming majority of Israelis feel that the international community is just condemning Israel with absolutely no justification over what happened with the Turkish Hamas flotilla. Israelis understand very clearly what is at work here, that the Turks, who used to be Israel's strongest strategic ally in the region, have become Israel's enemy, and that they are openly collaborating with Hamas, with Hezbollah, which they just invited to come for a summit in Istanbul, and, of course, with Iran and with Syria in the jihadist axis against Israel, and that this was an enemy flotilla whose aim was to weaken Israel's defense against Hamas and to provide this enemy axis with an outlet to the Mediterranean Sea. And the fact that the international community, led by the United States and the Obama administration, by the way, has been so outspoken in condemning Israel for doing, just really implementing the most passive form of national defense by enforcing this blockade of the Gaza coast, has been absolutely disgusting and unjustified, and this condemnation of Israel is absolutely monstrous. And you see, over 90% of the Israelis believe that the blockade should continue. An absolute majority of Israelis believe that Israel should continue the blockade, that the government should not give in to international pressure on the issue of Gaza and the blockade. And so, I think that view is very much reflected in my writing. It's not reflected, perhaps, in some of the other outlets in the media in Israel, and it's certainly not reflected in the international media, but that is the perspective of the Israeli people.
Why is Turkey turning away from Israel?
Well, Turkey, the Turks elected a stealth jihadist government in 2002 when they elected the Justice and Peace Party led by Recep Erdogan. And I'm not clear whether the Turkish people understood that they were electing a jihadist when they elected Erdogan and his party to rule the country, or whether they didn't. But what is very clear is that since he and his party took power 8 years ago, they have taken control over the media in Turkey and increasingly over the military in Turkey. They've changed the constitution. They have taken over the court system in Turkey. And they have really been very systematic in indoctrinating the Turks to believe that the West is Turkey's enemy, that the United States and Israel are the enemy, that Jews are subhuman, that Americans and Jews take pleasure in massacring innocent people and in stealing the organs of innocent people for fun and for profit. And this is the kind of indoctrination that's been going on in Turkey over the past 8 years. And the product of that is coming out very clearly now, and it has been really for the past year or so, since Erdogan has been very openly siding with and joining the Iranian axis.
Do you think what we did not know about Obama is hurting the relations between the U.S. and Israel?
Yeah, I think he was a stealth candidate in the sense that he is governing from the very, very, very far left. And with the collusion, active collaboration of the American media in the lead-up to the 2008 elections, the fact that he was such an ideological extremist was hidden from the American people. And I think that the American people who elected him to lead the United States thought that they were getting a centrist, somebody who talked about post-partisanship, that he was going to be a pragmatist. And I don't think that they realized what they were getting into. And I think that that's reflected in his drop in opinion polling surveys, that the more that the American people get to know the President of the United States, the less they like him. Now, I think that Israelis actually were very aware of his animus, or much more aware of it than the American people were, partially because it was better reported in the Israeli media. And so he was actually, the Israelis, I think there were two countries that were surveyed before the U.S. presidential elections, where the majority of the public supported McCain over Obama by a pretty significant margin, and that was in Israel and Poland. And all the other countries in the Western world, and of course in the Third World, supported Obama against McCain. But Israelis never supported Obama, and his opinion ratings in Israel have always been negligible. I mean, his approval ratings in Israel have been negligible since he took office.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, you know, I think it's a very frightening time right now, and you see really when America abdicates its role as the world's policeman, well, then you have all of the convicts leaving jail. And, you know, the rapidity with which the international system is really just collapsing, and the enemies of all that's good and right in the world are being emboldened to strike out and attack, whether it's the North Koreans sinking a South Korean naval ship and killing 46 South Korean sailors, or whether it's Iran sprinting towards the nuclear finish line and Iran and Syria and Turkey and their terror proxies in Lebanon and in the Palestinian authorities expanding and escalating their attacks against Israel, or Al-Qaeda escalating its attacks against the U.S. mainland. We see what happens. This is the consequence of what happened of when America abdicates its global leadership role, as it has since Obama took office. And, you know, right now, the Iranians are saying that they're going to be sending warships to Gaza to challenge Israel's blockade and effectively pick a fight or open a war with Israel. And so, you know, I don't know whether they're going to go through with it. The Iranians tend to be a lot of more bark than bite when it comes to these things. They prefer to have their proxies die for them, whether it's in Iraq or in Afghanistan or in Lebanon or where have you. But if they do, in fact, send their warships to Gaza, that will be an act of war, and it's a very frightening time. We're not at all clear. They will be met by the Israeli Navy, and the Navy will stop them, and prevent them from entering Gaza. The same with their sister ship that had reportedly been organized in Lebanon, full of Hezbollah soldiers who are, or whatever you want to call them, who are also planning on sending warships to Gaza. So, you know, it's a very frightening time right now, actually.
True. This is unbelievable to me.
Well, I just think that it's very important to underline also the United States really is doing a horrible thing by not standing by Israel. And not only from the perspective of what it means for Israel's national security, because that, of course, is horrendous what's happening. The United States is emboldening all of Israel's enemies to attack it, but also from the American perspective, which is that everybody is looking at what America's doing to Israel, and they're seeing that the United States is not a reliable ally. So the Saudis are looking at that, and they're making oil contracts with the Chinese as a consequence. They're hedging their bets. The Egyptians are saying they want to develop nuclear weapons, and the Jordanians as well. And they're looking to expand their alliances, and they're looking in directions like China, like Russia. You know, the Obama administration is under the mistaken impression that the fact that the U.S. is considered an ally of Israel in the Arab world has made it less popular in the Arab world. But the truth of the matter is that the Arab world sees, and the Islamic world, and in fact, for that matter, Europe, sees the United States and Israel as two sides of the same coin. And when they see the United States acting with such malice aforethought towards Israel in just about every aspect of the bilateral relationship, the conclusion that they come away with is that they cannot trust the United States as an ally, because if the United States is willing to treat Israel is so ruinously as the Obama administration is doing, then nobody can trust the United States, because the United States was always the one that stood by Israel. And so, you know, in a larger sense, in the sense that he claimed that he wanted to expand the arc of America's alliances in the third world by abandoning the U.S. strategic alliance with Israel and really joining the side of Israel's enemies, as we saw with his response to the Hamas-Turkey flotilla to Gaza, where he just announced last week that he's giving the Hamas another $400 million of U.S. taxpayer funds. What Obama is saying is that the United States is not trustworthy.
Carolyn Glick, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Have a good day.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
In the coming days and weeks, these efforts should capture up to 90% of the oil that is leaking out of the well. Now, that's not good enough, so we will continue to press BP and draw on our best minds and resources to capture the rest of the oil until the company finishes drilling a relief well later in the summer that is expected to stop the leak completely.
We all enjoyed Godfather 1. We all enjoyed Godfather 2. Now, we all went to the movies. I'll never forget the day. I can tell you where and when I was when GF3 opened. I went to a theater in Marin, a 70-millimeter movie when I still went to movies. Here was the sequel, Godfather 3. And it's the infamous scene with Andy Garcia, who was, if you remember at the time, an actor. Today he's working as a busboy in the Concord Hotel in Monticello, New York. He's running the largest station in the Concord Hotel, which is now a homeless shelter. At that time, Andy Garcia was an up-and-coming actor, good-looking young guy. And the famous love scene was between him and the leading lady in GF3. Out comes Coppola's daughter. There was a noticeable gasp in the auditorium. There must have been 2,000 people. They went, oh. They were shocked. She looked like Helen Thomas as a young woman. And nobody could believe that a director would use a young Helen Thomas as a lead, even if it was his daughter. A man who made such great movies wouldn't do that to himself. But his career never survived that, by the way. Nepotism can ruin a person's career. Do you remember that? I'm just thinking out loud. We're just kibitzing here like it's the Cafe Savage, like I used to do in the early days. You can only do politics for so long. Do you remember when I used to do Cafe Savage? And raise your hands. if you remember when I used to do afternoon radio and we'd have the sound of cafes clinking glasses and cups, and I said, make believe. No, that's too Frenchy for me. Turn it off. That's a little too Marais Chevalier, which is a little on the child molestation, you know. Every little reason, little girl. The guy was a molester. There's no question in my mind there was a sicko there with the spats and the gloves and the cane. This guy was a sick one. That's why the French loved him so much, him and Woody Allen. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind why Woody Allen's popular in France. It's where it belongs. I wish he'd move there and open a restaurant called Katz's, Woody Allen's Katz's restaurant, where we serve the worst food on earth. We enslave you with our corned beef. But I used to have Cafe Savage, where it was the sound of clinking cups and glasses. I remember we had the sound effect. And I would say to people, come on into the cafe and make believe it's my cafe. I'm behind the bar. And I'm serving you, you know, espresso, cappuccino, macchiato. In San Francisco, they have 5,000 names for coffee, and they're all bad. Go try to get a regular coffee. They never heard of it. They look like you're crazy. I went to Starbucks the other day. They do it to me every time when they get a new crew of kids who just graduated college in finance and can't get a job. So they take a job as a barrister. I don't laugh at the kids. Look, they have to start somewhere. So I go in every time. It's the same thing. I say, I'll have a small coffee. The guy says, you want a tall coffee? I said, small. He said, we call a tall small. I said, small. I don't care how your brain is twisted. Why would you call a small tall? What do you think? I'm stupid? I mean, why would you call a small coffee a tall coffee and a big coffee? What do you call a big coffee? A giant, you schmuck? I almost get into an argument with them every time. I said, a small coffee. Then I get guilty for arguing with a kid who's making minimum wage, and I always leave a dollar tip, which I do. I'm an overtipper. Some are overachievers. I'm an overtipper. I don't mean to argue with everybody, but stupidity gets to me no matter where I turn. If I order a small coffee, I don't want the schmuck with pimples to say, oh, you want a tall coffee. And they do it, by the way, to just ride you. They know what you mean. If the kid was taught anything by Starbucks, they, like, when a customer comes in and give me a small coffee, say, okay, you don't have to lecture them that it's called a tall in our establishment, because you're alienating the customer. He might come back, you know, and you might have a job another day if you actually said, okay. They always, something about San Francisco is everyone here, no matter how lowly they are, they have to correct you. No matter who you are, whatever you say to them, they correct your words. Whatever, wherever, whatever call it is. You call a plumber, you say A, they say B. They try to correct your pronunciation or your enunciation or your spelling. I never saw anything like this. And most of them are illiterate morons and never went to school. That's why I say, when I say small, I mean small. I don't mean tall. I'll take a call now on the Savage Nation. Here's San Francisco 860 on the dial. Norman, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Savage. I just wanted to say that, you know, I think the things that we're seeing in our society right now with all the problems going on are, and I have to say honestly, directly related to the 8 years of the Bush administration.
I think you're right. Everything was caused by Bush. I think him and Cheney engineered the Gulf disaster. And I personally think that he kept Obama from going out there for 12 days.
Well, I do appreciate you going out there. I mean, if you do go out there to...
No, I didn't say I said that Bush probably kept Obama from showing up for 12 days. Because, as you know, Obama's just a puppet of Bush, right?
No, I'm not saying that either.
You said Bush caused all of our problems. That would include Obama's inactivity with regard to the Gulf oil disaster, correct?
We're still seeing the hemorrhaging. We haven't even stopped the bleeding from what he did.
So, in other words, Bush left us a $1 trillion deficit, and Pelosi and company and Obama have given us a $4 trillion budget blowout in a year and a half, and you say that's Bush's fault?
No, Bush tried to.
You just said it's Bush's fault. Bush gave us a $1 trillion deficit, so Obama's solution is to create a $4 trillion deficit. So how can you blame Bush for that?
Bush started in the bailout. He started with, I think it was AIG, but
I said it was a $1 trillion hole he left us. So the solution is a $4 trillion hole.
Well, if we didn't keep going and stop...
Oh, I get your philosophy, how it works. I see how your philosophy works. So your philosophy is so set up that whatever happens, it's all Bush's fault.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, you just said that. You said all the problems that we face are Bush's fault.
We couldn't let the banks fail. He started the bailout to try and... keep us from out of the
so, in other words, when Obama did not use dispersant chemicals to break up the oil in the Gulf, that was because Dick Cheney said, don't use dispersant chemicals?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Michael.
And when Obama failed to mobilize the U.S. Navy or any boats to deploy booms and containment devices, that was because of Bush, correct?
No, Cheney, during...
And when Obama rejected Japan, France, China, and Russia's help, even though these nations have deep-sea submarines and robots that could have gone a mile under the ocean, that was because Bush said don't use them?
Michael, you've asked me five questions in a row.
Well, because you're not answering any of them. You're reporting on gibberish in your brain. You're a San Franciscan who obviously is so biased you can't even have a discussion. So I may as well resort to my methodology, which is giving you facts and hitting you with them, hitting you over the head with the facts. Have a nice day. I'm not going to waste my time. I've given you three things, four things, five things, six things that Obama did not do because he's dangerously inexperienced, disconnected, detached. Blame it on Bush. This is Michael Savage broadcasting to 400 or so radio stations, 380, 375, 400, who can count, on MPLS, multi-protocol label switching devices.
Savage.